Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This weather's more schizophrenic than Dan what's his name in Legion. Have y'all seen that show on FX? There is a show you need to watch. Welcome, it's Eric Erickson here, News 95.5 AM 750 WSB. The phone number 404-872-0750-1-800-WSB-TALK. We'll get into healthcare and I'll bring you up to speed on that, but we got to look somewhere else first. Other big news. By the way, there appears to have been an axe-wielding terrorist in Dusseldorf. A number of people have been injured. There's still news coming in. There's some pretty graphic pictures, but we don't know a lot there. When we do, I'll talk about that, but I don't want to just, in the age of fake news and people rushing stuff out when it's incorrect, I don't want to dive into that until we know more details. What I do know is that Washington State, Minnesota, New York, and Hawaii are rushing back to court to protest Donald Trump's immigration executive order on restricted travel. This time, he's gone through the proper channels. He's gone through the Department of Justice. He's gone through the Department of Defense. He's gone through the National Security Council. And he's gone through the Department of Homeland Security. He's drafted an immigration order restricting immigration from six countries that the Obama administration, not the Trump administration, but that the Obama administration listed as having high propensity for state sponsorship of terrorism. Iraq has been excluded under this order because the Department of Defense suggested the high number of people coming in are in large part people who were American collaborators, and if they stay in Iraq, they could potentially be killed. So Iraq is no longer on the list. Now, these states are going through. Also, you should know that the new order does not include green card holders. Therefore, if you have a green card from one of those countries, you can come back into this country. So the state of Washington has rushed back into court again, saying that this is improper. By the way, Barack Obama did this exact same thing when he was president. The state of Washington said nothing. This is a temporary hold to review the program. That's all. It's not permanent. What gives the state of Washington standing? See, this is the issue, and this is where we're going to see how political this is, and we're going to see how political the courts are and the judges are. And you know it's going to be Democrat judges in Washington doing this because they don't have standing. To go to court, you have to have standing. You have to have a legitimate grievance. When Washington State went the first time, they said their legitimate grievance was that there were Washington State citizens who have green cards, who are residents of the state, who are out of the country, who can't get back in. And that gave them the standing to contest the original immigration order. The best they can do now is say, well, we've got spouses of Washington State citizens who don't have visas and can't come to the country. Well, they couldn't come to the country in the first place. They could not come to the country without a visa to begin with, so they don't have standing. There's nothing. You may not like this immigration order. I've got a number of friends of mine in the Christian community who oppose this order, and I have no problem with their opposition. It's grounded in faith. They have legitimate arguments. And I'm very sympathetic to a lot of the arguments. But there's a difference between being opposed to it because you don't think this is needed and being opposed to it because you think it's unconstitutional when it's perfectly constitutional. So let me give you, just so you understand, where, for example, the Ethics Religious Liberty Commission, the Ethics and Public Policy Foundation in Washington, D.C., other Christian groups, some pretty prominent pastors, why they oppose the immigration order. And their thinking here is that the overwhelming majority of the people who are seeking refugee status are persecuted minorities in the Middle East. They're not all Christians, but all of them are persecuted. And those persecuted minority religious communities self-regulate better than anyone else. What I mean by that is that if you get a group of Christians coming from Mosul into a UN refugee camp, and someone comes in and claims to be part of that group, well, all those Christians, the group is so small, they know each other, and they can call BS on that person saying they're part of the group. So those groups self-regulate. The other issue that raises the concern among a lot of the Christian groups opposed to this is that it takes 2.5 to 3 years to go through the vetting process anyway. So the odds of an Al-Qaeda terrorist embedding themselves into the refugee program in hopes of getting here, overcoming the self-regulated nature of the communities and the American vetting process, there's a big misconception out there among some folks who think that the UN picks who comes to the United States. That's not true. The United Nations picks who's allowed into the United Nations camps and then farms them out to the various countries to be vetted. And the U.S. takes 2.5 to 3 years to vet the people before they come here. So that's the objection. Just so you understand why there's a faith-based objection. That's why a lot of the Christian activists who oppose the immigration order fully support securing the border with a border wall, because they think it's more likely for an Al-Qaeda terrorist to come across the border or an ISIS terrorist to come across the border than it is to come through the immigration program, knowing it's going to be 2.5 to 3 years, and then it's still not a sure thing they're going to be able to come here. But that's not the case Hawaii and Washington and Minnesota and New York are making. Because if that's the case they were making, they wouldn't have legal standing, and they're trying to conjure up legal standing. And the legal standing they're coming up with is that it's unconstitutional, that the president doesn't have the power. But the president does have the power. Congress granted him the power. Congress granted the president the power to temporarily suspend immigration programs involving refugees. It is in statutory form. So the only way that these people are going to be able to get the federal courts to enjoin this order is for them to play at partisan games, because there really legitimately is no legal basis for them to be able to do this. Again, Barack Obama did the exact same thing. In fact, in the new immigration order, they cite that as a precedent. Barack Obama delayed this refugee program dealing with Iraqi refugees. If the courts do this, and the courts may very well do this, if the courts hold it, what we're seeing is partisans. We're seeing people who believe they're part of the Democratic resistance fighting Donald Trump. And that degrades the integrity of the judicial system. When you look at the judicial system and you root for outcomes instead of rooting for the rule of law, you no longer have a judicial system worth anything. And that's where the left is headed today. They're rooting for outcomes. They don't care how we get there. They don't care if it's undemocratic. They don't care if it undermines the republic. They just want the outcome. And that is a really bad place to go, because guess what? It's a precedent, and Republicans will get there too. Welcome back. It's Eric Erickson here. 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Now, how about we take a phone call or two? Neil in Atlanta, welcome to the program.
Hey, great to talk to you, sir. I just had a question. I'm a millennial Trump voter, but I'm so tired of seeing them fumble this health care bill. My question is, have we become so embedded with the government being involved with health care that we had Congress repeal it last year? We had the executive order eliminating the individual mandate. So why can't the government just get out of healthcare altogether?
Well, they should, but I'll tell you why they're not. And I want to spend a little more time on this when we come back as well. But the problem is the approach. That is, the government is looking to make sure as many Americans get health care coverage as possible, as opposed to looking to make health care costs as low as possible. And you go in two different directions when you do that. When you want to get as many people covered as possible, you expand government entitlement programs. And that brings government into health care. If they instead targeted lowering the cost of health care, and Obamacare doesn't lower the cost of health care. That is a myth that the Democrats peddle, and there's no evidence to back them up on this. Well, what happens is you start doing things to incentivize competition. And when you incentivize competition, you incentivize the free market to begin lowering costs. And when you begin lowering costs, you allow more people to get on healthcare. Not only that, but when you lower costs, you make it more financially practical for employers to start expanding their coverage to employees, allowing employees to get on employer-sponsored healthcare plans. But the Republicans aren't doing that. They've fallen into the same trap as the Democrats. The Democrats focused on fixing healthcare by expanding opportunities for people to be enrolled in a government program, believing that the government is the only way to get it right. Well, we know that the government does things more inefficient than the private sector. We know the government is less effective than the private sector in similar programs. We know that the government causes costs to go up. Costs never go down when the government is involved. I mean, you've heard of the $1,000 toilet and the $150 hammer and you name it. The costs when government is involved are always higher. The Republican approach to getting rid of Obamacare, which they could still do through the reconciliation process, should be to focus on lowering the costs. What would it take to lower the costs? Well, allow people to buy insurance across state lines. Get rid of the Obamacare regulations on insurance companies. Get rid of the demands on insurance companies. Allow employers to completely write off costs. Give them tax deductions in addition to the current corporate tax issues, to giving part-time employees health care coverage. Incentivize competition and deregulation. That would work, but the Republicans, they don't have any ideas in that regard. So I want to delve into this Obamacare thing, the Republican legislation. The phone number as well, 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. It is Eric Erickson. And tomorrow morning, by the way, I will be in for Herman Cain. He's out having more fun than we are, and I will be here for him in the morning. A buddy of mine put something up on Facebook. He works on Capitol Hill, and he makes a good point. He just sent it to me. He's listening online. When I was talking about lowering costs, let me read you what he wrote. This is his area of expertise. And he says, we should be taking the deliberate approach of reducing costs over the longer term. Four things would happen. More people will be able to afford their own coverage to the free market. Increased private market choice and activity leads to innovation and competition, which drives down costs. The percentage of the population that needs supplemental coverage and assistance from state or federal programs goes down. When you have a smaller percentage of the population needing supplemental health care assistance, coupled with a strong and competitive free market, the cost of doing so is much lower per capita. Long story short, by focusing on reducing costs as opposed to increasing numbers covered, you save individuals money, and over the long term, you save taxpayer money by having government programs that provide better and cheaper services. A framework that focuses on coverage numbers is doomed to failure over the long term, as we've already seen with Obamacare. And all the Republicans are doing are repackaging Obamacare. Now, President Trump has invited in the House Freedom Caucus, the conservative members of the House, to come to the White House, have a beer and bowl. Not that he's going to have a beer with them. He doesn't drink, but he's going to bowl with them. You know, bowling, throwing the – I haven't been bowling in a while. The last time I went, I did pretty good until the end, and – Then my stinking producer decided he had to show me up in front of people, and I should have fired him on the spot nonetheless. He's still here for reasons I can't understand. So the president is getting, actually, you gotta admit, some commendable commentary from TV shows. Listen to this.
Next week, members of the House Freedom Caucus are invited to the White House for pizza and bowling. Joe.
Well, yeah, you know, and of course, we were critical of Barack Obama
for not doing pizza and bowling.
But there's a reason he didn't bring over bowling. And I think we all know it. If you watch Morning Joe regularly,
no. He's very good at bowling. You stop right now. Just stop. Put that away. Or I'll start.
I think you got a 48. Hold on. Maybe this is better.
That's how they bowl at Harvard Law School, Joe. Stop making fun of that.
I'm not making fun of him. No, I'm not.
President Obama, a really awful bowler. But, you know, the thing that Obama didn't do, take bowling out of it, he didn't do this sort of outreach to Capitol Hill. He thought it was beneath him. He didn't need to hobnob. He didn't need to glad hand. He didn't need to woo. Donald Trump is trying to glad hand, trying to woo. You got to give him credit for that. Now, he wants to, I'm told, offer the House Freedom Caucus the opportunity to add amendments to the legislation to change it. See, this is why I don't think the Republicans should pass the plan to begin with, is because the moment they pass anything, they're going to own health care. If the House Freedom Caucus is able to get their amendments through and it doesn't significantly improve the bill, well, now they own it. They can't very well say, oh, we're not going to vote for it now, because they will have amended the thing and they will have to take ownership of it. That's not a good idea, I don't think. They need to get away from it. Go be nice to the president and bowl with him and eat his pizza, but don't commit to supporting this or offering a bunch of amendments to try to improve it. Let's go back to the phones. Wesley, Marietta, you are up next. Welcome.
Hi, Eric. I've worked for a health insurer, and the state lines issue is one that has always intrigued me, because I don't understand why conservatives are so so obsessed with it, is what it seems like to me. Because what it seems to me is if I, as a health insurer, what the cost of me getting into a new market is not really the regulation. I mean, that's a portion of it, but the cost is building out the provider network. And, you know, if you live in Georgia, I don't want to buy coverage from a Pennsylvania insurer, because, you know, none of my doctors are in network, none of the hospitals are in network. It doesn't do you a whole lot of good. And the other thing that I've often struggled with that piece of policy is that it requires the heavy hand of the federal government telling the state of Georgia, hey, you've got to accept a health plan that's regulated in California or somewhere else. Because Georgia has a law in the books that says, hey, out-of-state health insurers can sell in Georgia if they want to. They don't have to set up a subsidiary here, which is what you ordinarily have to do. But no insurer has taken up on them. It just doesn't. I like a lot of the conservative ideas, but that one just doesn't seem to.
So, you know, I think the conservative argument here, Wesley, is that this is a start, not an end, although there's a conservative argument against it as well. What's going to happen if you start allowing people to go across state lines? You're going to find states have an incentive to attract insurance companies by offering bare bones health care plans that don't cover everything. And eventually all of the insurance companies are going to wind up in the one state that doesn't require them to offer or cover anything. And you get really cheap insurance that doesn't do anything, at which point the federal government has to come in and take over the insurance industry. And there are a lot of conservatives who look at it that way. The conservatives who look at it as you should be able to buy across state lines, view it as a starting point to stimulate free market competition in healthcare. That when you can go buy healthcare insurance from a company in Alabama that isn't required to cover all of the things Georgia makes them cover, that it'll be a lower cost insurance plan, allegedly, and that will stimulate coverage. Again, though, that then gets into the other conservative concern, that then suddenly you have bare bones insurance plans across the country coming out of one state, no other state can compete with, and ultimately you have a federal takeover of insurance because the plans don't actually offer anything. That would be bad. Now, did y'all hear the John Ossoff advertisement? I mean, God bless him. Every ad here, you hear an advertisement, I hear angels raining down pennies from heaven on top of me. So I'm not going to complain. But it's very interesting. He's got a very grown-up, adult, masculine voice doing the voiceover. You know, you hear the voice at the end, "Hi, I'm John Ossoff, and I'm running for Congress." It sounds like a little kid voice. I got the grown-up voice. "John Ossoff had security clearance when he worked for Hank Johnson in Congress." If you're running in the 6th Congressional District, which is one of the most Republican districts in Georgia, why do you name-check John Lewis and call for saving Obamacare? Is that consultants run amok who don't understand? That's been one of my suspicions about this race. It is 6:09. I am Eric Erickson, and if you want to call me, the number's 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK here at WSB, where the weather outside is delightful for now. Can you believe we're going to have snow again? It's just crazy. My kids are really upset that I'm not going to like pack them up and take them to the North Georgia mountains for snow next week. They've been wanting snow. You know, when I was a kid, I grew up in the desert. Snow was a foreign concept to me. And my kids want snow all the time. And I am pretty sure that when they get old, they will want nothing to do with it. Largely because they will realize how bad drivers in the South are when it snows. And it really doesn't get any better up north. I want to go back to, there was an advertisement at the end of the last hour from John Ossoff's campaign, and I find it fascinating for a couple of reasons. One, he's advertising on WSB, which demographically isn't necessarily the core market for a Democrat. It's not. I mean, if we're honest about it, it's not. But he doesn't use the word Democrat in the ad. So there's that. And he talks about, he's got a guy who is not him. His voice is very young. And so he's got a very gravelly adult voice. "John Ossoff had CIA clearance when he was in Congress working for Hank Johnson," or whatever it said. "John Ossoff is the guy who will roll back the oceans and make the world heal itself. Coming soon." But he name checks John Lewis, and he says we don't need to repeal Obamacare, we need to fix Obamacare. Now, take John Lewis out of this for just a second. I know what the polling in the 6th Congressional District is on Obamacare, and it is not good. It was not good in the exit polling where Donald Trump won by a point and a half. It was not good. So it's perplexing to me that you've got a Democrat running an ad on during a conservative talk show where he doesn't say Democrat, but he does say he doesn't want to repeal Obamacare, but then add into that John Lewis. And, you know, so he's told the New York Times, he's got $3 million. A lot of liberals have poured money into his race because they want to beat Donald Trump. And they view this race as a way to strike a blow at Donald Trump because it is a Republican district. It is the Republican district of the current Health and Human Services Secretary who left Congress for the HHS position. And so he's targeting it that way. But my sense is that he's got so much money they're wasting it, that he's become the liberal darling. The New York Times running glorious profiles of him, left-wing activists running glorious profiles of him, pouring money in. This is a conservative district. And so what will happen is, let's say in the worst case scenario he gets elected, he's only going to serve out this Tom Price term. Because then he's going to be on the ballot He would be on the ballot in 2018 as a Democrat, and this district went for Mitt Romney 20%. See, Trump was anomalous, and this is what has the Democrats confused, is Trump was anomalous. There were a lot of female Republicans in that district who did not like Donald Trump, and they didn't vote for Hillary, although some of them did. They just sat home. If you look at the 6th congressional district, and you go down the ballot from the president, there's actually an increase in votes in the 6th congressional district because a lot of people didn't vote for the presidential race. Those people, senior citizens in particular, they are going to come out. They are pro-Trump now, and many of the Republicans who weren't pro-Trump then are pro-Trump now because they've seen all the left-wing reaction to him, and they've decided, well, he can't be that bad if so many Democrats are losing their minds. So I don't get it. I want to spend a little more time here on a different state issue, and that is, why is the state school superintendent an elected position? Why? Because the governor appoints a state school board. Why is the superintendent elected? Now, and this is a relevant topic. You see, the governor and state school superintendent, who is a very good guy, by the way, the state school superintendent and the governor, they're both good people. And they're arguing over control of an improvement officer of sorts to go in and help improve school districts. And the governor supported the plan, and he wants control over whoever this person is who goes in and tries to fix schools. And he has been saying, well, the state school superintendent really hasn't made headway in this. The state school superintendent says, well, it takes some time. I just want to know why we have an elected school superintendent. And here's my reason for asking the question. Nobody knows who the state school superintendent is, and the governor gets all the blame. And the governor gets all the credit. When schools do well, the governor gets the credit. When schools do poorly, the governor gets the blame. Nobody knows who the state school superintendent is. He is at the bottom of the ballot when it comes to statewide officers. So why can't the governor appoint the state school superintendent and make the state school superintendent responsible to the governor? If the governor gets to appoint people to the state school board, why not appoint the superintendent? Or appoint the members of the school board and let them pick then their superintendent? It seems like we could have one less constitutional officer and one less statewide race. We would be able to save a little bit of money there as well, more likely than not, as a result of eliminating that position. Now, this has nothing to do with the current state school superintendent. I endorsed him in the primary. I support the guy. He's a good guy. He is deeply concerned about the state of education in Georgia. He is not a Common Core supporter, which I like. But I don't understand why we need to have this position. And now we're at loggerheads between the governor and the state school superintendent over legislation to improve schools in Georgia. It is legislation the governor fought for. It is legislation the governor came up with. It seems to me that the governor is the perfect person to be put in charge of it, or to appoint the people who are in charge of implementing the plan to improve schools. But we've got an elected state school superintendent, and if the governor can be in charge of all this stuff, what the heck is the point of the state school superintendent? And it seems like it makes a whole lot more sense if the next education reform the state legislature does, they allow the governor to pick the state school superintendent and take it out of it. I mean, it would probably take 2/3 of the legislature because they'd have to amend the Constitution. But it seems like that would be the wisest choice here. Because again, and this is the biggest issue for me on this, is no one, if you were to poll the state of Georgia and ask them what is the name of the state school superintendent, 80% of the people would have no idea. They would know the governor, but they wouldn't know the state school superintendent. And many of them would think that the governor appoints the state school superintendent to begin with, because they give the governor all the blame and all the credit. So why not legitimize that and give the governor legitimately the proper blame and the proper credit for the situation, and let him carry on with the reforms? He's got the plan. He's been the one leading it, and it's his legacy. It's not the state school superintendent's legacy. It is 6:25 here. Obviously, the radar is clear if you can look out the window. It is a gorgeous day, but it's going to snow next week in North Georgia. Good gracious. I want to go to the phones to Charles in Atlanta. You're going to be next. Welcome.
Hi, Eric. How are you?
I'm good. How about yourself?
I'm great. I've been trying to get a hold of you guys for weeks. I'm going to try to talk fast because there's a lot of content. But if you look at the Affordable Care Act, what makes health care unaffordable? Well, one of the things is the amount of fraud. You can YouTube it. You can see Eric Holder and Savillas during a press conference where he admits that there's $90 billion of fraud annually in the health care system. I used to work for Blue Cross Blue Shield. We would routinely have a question for a doctor's office, ask for clarification on treatment, and find out a doctor's office didn't even exist. So if you look,
yeah.
If you look during the last 8 years of the Obama administration, that works out to almost $1 trillion of theft. That's what fraud is, it's theft. So what does any business do if things get stolen from them? They have to make up. They have to keep the lights on. They have to pay salaries. They have to make a profit. So they raise the rate.
Yep.
So if God willing and somebody from the Trump administration, I tried to write a plan when I was with Blue Cross Blue Shield to say, hey, hire 100,000 GS-12 compliance officers to go check, because people don't realize this includes doctor's office, dentist office, the people that sells medications, pains, mm-hmm. all that stuff.
Oh, yeah, the fraud issue is huge, and that's one of the things that every candidate seems to run on is they're going to stamp out waste, fraud, and abuse, and they sometimes get to the waste. Rarely do they actually get to the fraud.
Right. I did the calculations. If you hired 100,000 new federal workers, compliance officers, and check out there, just check all these dentist, doctor's offices, all that stuff, give them a laptop, give them a car, give all that stuff, it would cost the federal government about $3.2 billion to run that part of Health and Human Services. However, the savings would be more than $30 billion, and that's just because half of the – I mean, if you had 100,000 people on the street across America just checking, the fraud percentage would go down would be at least half.
Well, yeah, and you got to disincentivize it as well. Charles, I appreciate the phone call. It is so easy to commit fraud because the system is so overwhelmed, it's so very hard to find. You know, it's one of those interesting things that in up-and-coming countries that are pulling themselves out of the third world level, one of the things that they go after hard in criminal law is fraud, government fraud and personal private sector fraud, because they want to attract in business. And that's something that we need to recommit to as a country, is going after fraud against the government, because it becomes very easy for people to defraud the federal government because there's so many wheels moving, it's very hard to catch it. They do need some dedicated officers going out beyond the Inspector General Corps. So, have you guys heard about the ongoing investigation in the military, the Marine Facebook group, where soldiers and Marines are sharing naked pictures of their female colleagues? And in some cases, now a website, private website, has been discovered where they were naming their colleagues they wanted pictures of, and people would get points for being able to root out pictures of the female service members and put them on this website. Now, I shouldn't have to preface this with this statement, but I'm going to, out of an abundance of caution. Bad, bad Marines should not do that. Bad, bad. Bad behavior. They will be punished. I say that to say this. Is anybody surprised? Is anybody surprised? When they were integrating the service, a lot of us said stuff like this was going to happen. Doesn't make it right, but we all knew it was going to happen. And people are just there outraged. Oh, we never saw this coming. Of course you saw it coming. It's one reason you shouldn't. You know, I saw the other day some Trump appointee is in trouble for saying there's a pregnancy crisis in the Navy. Well, he's telling the truth. Do you know how many female members of the sailors are suddenly getting pregnant after being offshore and on submarines and whatnot with men? It was bound to happen. It's one of the reasons conservatives have long opposed putting women and men in co-ed situations in the military. Stuff like this is bound to happen. Doesn't make it right. Shouldn't happen. But of course it's happened. And all these people are shocked. Shocked, I tell you. Shocked that it happened. Absolutely ridiculous. All right. To the phones we go. Eric, you are next. Welcome.
Eric?
Hi there.
Hey, this is Eric. How are you? I love your show.
Thanks very much.
I was thumbing through Facebook today, and I think it was Business Insider. They were talking about a bill that was passed between the House and the Senate to fund NASA to get us to Mars by 2033. Did you hear about that?
Yes, it is the Cruz Nelson plan. It is one of the very few bipartisan pieces of legislation to come out of Congress. What makes it deeply funny for a lot of people is that it is Ted Cruz getting spending legislation passed with a Democrat.
I thought it was awesome, and I know you share on Instagram, your telescope and camera pictures and stuff.
Listen, you're
the first person I thought of.
I am a proponent of the space program, and I think there are a lot of things government spends money on that it shouldn't, and this is
one of the things
that government should spend more money on.
Well, that's just another thing we're in agreement on.
Well, there you go. Thanks very much for the phone
Have
call.
Have a good day.
You too. And he's even got a good name. Eric. No, seriously, folks, and I know some of my conservative friends bristle when I say this, and some of my friends are upset about Ted Cruz pushing this legislation. But have you ever considered the amount of private sector inventions and private sector goods and services that were first developed in the space program? And the rate of return on those to not just the government, but to progress in the private sector, from computing to AstroTurf to ballpoint pens, you name it. And there is something to be said for aspirations. You know, when our math and science scores were highest in this country among black and white students both was when we were headed to the moon. And the aspirations of kids, they wanted to be the next Neil Armstrong. There is something to that, and I think it is money well spent in the long run for us to do something, because we have long-term gains on that investment that you don't necessarily see them on paper, but you certainly see them. You have them in your hand. Hello, iPhone, among other things. Ed Zetzler in the state legislature deserves a round of applause, folks. He is a member of the Senate and has come up with a genius piece of legislation that I hope the legislature will support. It gets rid of the punishments, major punishments, for rolling through a stop sign at less than 5 miles per hour if there's no one around. Now, this is real for me, as it is for many of you listening right now. It didn't involve me. It actually involved my wife. In our old neighborhood, you would come down a hill, and there was a stop sign at the hill, but the neighbors on either side of the stop sign had let their azalea bushes get so bushy that they spilled out over into the road. And the only way you could see if traffic was coming was to inch out past the stop sign and then look both ways to see if traffic was coming. My wife rolled through the stop sign and came to a stop and looked both ways, and there was a police officer standing there waiting to give her a ticket, knowing people did that, had given more than a dozen tickets that morning to people doing just that. And he lectured all of them. You're supposed to stop at the stop sign and then roll through and stop again. Never mind that it would have been impossible the way the intersection worked for anyone to collide with you by rolling through the stop sign a couple of inches. It's just absolutely insanity that happens. And I'm so glad a member of the legislature has proposed legislation to curb this abuse. And it is an abuse. And it happens when police officers are on quota systems and they have to write so many tickets. And all they do is they go out to certain intersections that they know and they wait for people who do have to go through the stop sign to be able to look both ways to see if anybody's coming. They do that. And all this would do, you could still do a $100 ticket. But there would be no points on your insurance and nothing else, and there would be a lot of waivers involved. Now, if there were, if it was in a school zone or there was traffic present and whatnot, you wouldn't be able to get away with it. But otherwise, if there's nobody around, you would. I think it is common sense. This is the same legislature that had to pass a law that says you can't admit radar speed detection evidence as long as someone's going within 10 miles of the speed limit over the speed of 35. Because so many police officers, particularly in South Georgia, were setting up speed traps and abusing it with people going 5 miles over the speed limit. Now, you can say, well, they're speeding. They're breaking the law. Okay, yes, I get it. But have you ever driven on I-16 to Savannah when there's nobody around? I mean, they should get rid of the speed limit on that road altogether. That should be Georgia's Autobahn. They should just scrap the speed limit on I-16. And for the life of me, I have no idea why the legislature still has a speed limit on I-16. They got legislators coming up I-16 from Savannah. Now, they all have the legislative license plate, so they're not going to get pulled over. But the rest of us are going to get pulled over. They absolutely should scuttle the speed limit on I-16. Otherwise, they should at least allow you to roll through a stop sign. I just started talking and didn't even have the microphone on. It is 6:56 here in Atlanta. I would have had an extra few seconds had I pushed the button. Hey, by the way, don't forget you can text WSB to 444-999 and sign up for the show notes. Have you heard about the burger flipping robot? They've decided to jack up the minimum wage in California, so restaurants are firing employees and getting burgers flipped by robots. Told you it would happen.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.